Hello everyone, thank you for joining us. Leave it or face death. This is yet another warning the Israeli military has issued to residents living in the northern parts of the besieged Gaza Strip. The warning comes as hundreds of thousands of Gazans have already moved southward to take refuge in temporary shelters. However, the areas they have fled to are also being hit by Israeli warplanes and artillery. More than 4,700 Palestinians have been killed since the regime launched this onslaught on Gaza over 2 weeks ago. More than 16,000 people have been wounded. According to the UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees, known as UNRWA, it has also lost at least 29 of its staff in Israeli bombardments. In the meantime, the Israeli military said one of its tanks had accidentally fired at an Egyptian post near the border with Gaza. A convoy of 17 trucks carrying humanitarian aid has entered the Gaza Strip from Egypt's Rafah crossing. The trucks are carrying food supplies, water and medicines, which aid groups say are critical for Gaza's 2.3 million residents. This came a day after a convoy comprising 20 trucks arrived in the besieged enclave, the first to enter Gaza since October 7th. The Red Crescent and the UN have warned that the limited aid shipment is nowhere near enough to meet the urgent needs of Gazans. Israel has imposed a total siege on the region since early this month. Korea Ria Goda is with the Federation of Iraqi Trade Unions. She tells us about the need for solidarity with Palestinians amid Israel's onslaught on Gaza and normalization deals between some Arab states and the regime.
Right now, the people of Gaza and the children of Gaza are dying and the world is quiet. Even some of the Arab countries that pretend to be concerned for the future of Jerusalem and its liberation, they are now normalizing with Israel. This thing, the normalization, which is humiliating and frightening because the people of Palestine is in need of total solidarity and support and a firm stand of every Arab and all free people of the world. We are embroiled with them in the struggle, even though we are from far-off lands geographically. We continue our struggle with them in order to prepare and mobilize the Arab public opinion and international public opinion in order to assist and support and stand firmly with the struggle of the Palestinian people. And now I believe that the Iraqi people will spare nothing, will not hold back to be with their Palestinian people in solidarity. And in fact, some youth have all the determination to go to Palestine in order to help their people in Gaza.
Israel says one of its troops was killed and three others were injured during a raid into the Gaza Strip. The Israeli military spokesman says the raid was carried out as part of preparation for a ground attack and to gather intelligence. Earlier, the military wing of the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas said it had ambushed an Israeli armored unit that had trespassed a few meters into the territory. The Al-Qassam Brigade added that two Israeli bulldozers and a tank were destroyed and the forces retreated back across the separation fence. Hamas has warned that Gaza will turn into a graveyard for invaders. The resistance movement has also been firing thousands of missiles into Israel. Since the beginning of Operation Al-Aqsa Flood, at least 1,500 Israelis have been killed and nearly 5,000 injured. Israel is also escalating its atrocities in the West Bank while continuing its relentless bombardment of the Gaza Strip. The regime's forces have killed two more Palestinians in the occupied territory. 17-year-old Jihad Saleh and Mohammed Abu Zer, aged 29, were fatally shot during an Israeli raid on the town of Zawata, west of Nablus. Two other Palestinians were injured by the regime's live bullets. Earlier, another young Palestinian was killed by Israeli troops near a refugee camp north of Al-Khalil. Since the start of Israel's bloody war on Gaza, 93 Palestinians have been killed and some 1,400 others injured in the West Bank. Iran's president has dismissed U.S. President Joe Biden's pro-Israel remarks as reactionary, anti-democratic, and inhuman. Addressing a cabinet session, Ebrahim Raisi said Biden's recent statement amounts to Washington's unwanted confession that the Israeli regime is a fake one. Biden had said recently that if there were not an Israel, the U.S. would have to invent one. President Raisi then touched upon the unprecedented global outrage and fury against the heinous crimes being committed by the Tel Aviv regime in Gaza. He slammed the international community for remaining tight-lipped in the face of the Israeli massacre of Palestinians with the U.S. backing. He added that the Israeli crimes against Palestinians are a glaring example of war crimes and crimes against humanity. South Africa's Foreign Minister Naledi Pandor is in Tehran upon an official invitation by her Iranian counterpart Hossein Amir Abdollahian. During a meeting in Tehran on Sunday, the top diplomats discussed issues of mutual interest as well as the recent developments in West Asia. Gisumi Shahamadi has the details.
Heading a high-ranking delegation, South Africa's foreign minister arrived in the Iranian capital, Tehran, to hold talks with high-ranking Iranian officials. First stop, Iran's foreign ministry. The two sides sat down for talks. The foreign ministers emphasized on expanding bilateral relations and discussed preparations for President Ebrahim Raisi's upcoming visit to South Africa. But most importantly, they focused on cooperation in the framework of BRICS.
As BRICS members, we need to do much more to have dynamic, concrete attention to reform of the mechanisms of the United Nations, most particularly the UN Security Council, which we as BRICS members believe is undemocratic in practice and not representative in composition. Thus, UNSC reform is an important agenda item on the business of BRICS.
A stance that was echoed by Iran's foreign minister, who cited the inaction of the UNSC in the face of the U.S.'s blatant support for Israel in its incessant attacks on Gaza.
I would like to warn the U.S. and its proxy, Israel, if the war crimes and crimes against humanity in Gaza is not stopped. Any possibility at any moment is imaginable, and the region will get spiral out of control, and the warmongers will be the ones who will suffer.
This with the South African diplomat also on the same page, expressing strong support for Palestine.
It is sad that many countries in the region in which Palestine exists had essentially deserted the people of Palestine. But I think they can see today why countries like South Africa have been consistent in their support for Palestine and have never deviated from the belief President Mandela held that until the people of Palestine are free, South Africa will not be fully free.
A clear sign that this support is more than just rhetoric, and both Iran and South Africa are prepared to take it to the next level. Both Iran and South Africa are clear regarding their stance in condemning the Israeli regime's atrocities in the occupied territories and their full support for the Palestinian nation fighting for freedom. Gisumi Shahmadi, Tehran.
Iran's foreign minister says Israel's ultimate goal is the forced displacement of Palestinians from the besieged Gaza Strip and the occupied West Bank to Egypt's Sinai Peninsula and parts of Jordan. Hossein Amir Abdollahian said Tel Aviv wants a Palestinian government to be formed outside Palestinians' ancestral lands. However, he added, resistance groups are the main obstacle to the regime's intended plot. The Iranian foreign minister made the remarks during a phone call with his Egyptian counterpart. He said the Iranian Red Crescent Society is ready to send food and medicine to Gaza through Egypt. Amir Abdollahian has also sent a letter to Vatican's foreign minister detailing Israel's atrocities and crimes against Palestinians. In the letter, he said, the occupied Palestinian territories are witnessing a new vision of barbarism. The top Iranian diplomat underlined that Israel is enforcing systematic apartheid not only on Muslims, but on the followers of all Abrahamic religions, including Christians. Pro-Palestinian rallies have been held across the world to demand an end to the bloodshed in Gaza amid the regime's brutal aggression against the besieged territory.
Free, free Palestine!
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 In Brussels, thousands of people held a protest by gathering outside the EU Commission and the Council's headquarters. They chanted Free Palestine, holding banners and waving Palestinian flags. Similar gatherings were held in France and Germany in defiance of a governmental crackdown on such protests under the pretext of preventing anti-Semitism. Sporadic scuffles broke out during those protests in Berlin. Similar protests were held in Denmark, Poland, and other parts of the globe. On Saturday, tens of thousands of pro-Palestinian demonstrators marched through a raided London to demand Israel stop its bombardment of Gaza.
Nearly 10,000 people in Paris held an intense rally demanding a halt to Israel's massacres in Gaza and that their politicians diplomatically work towards an immediate ceasefire. France's anti-Palestinian stance has worsened under President Emmanuel Macron, who has refused to put pressure on Israel to reduce their atrocities while fanning the flames of Islamophobia and constantly manipulating a so-called war on terror.
Macron is for the bourgeoisie and not for his own people. He certainly doesn't listen to the working class, who doesn't have any problem with the Jews, but who will not tolerate Zionism and their repeated massacres of Palestinians.
Macron's effort for a blanket ban on all pro-Palestinian demonstrations was legally rejected, but banning protests on a case-by-case method was approved. This was the first legal demonstration since the unrest began, allowing the average Parisian to express their solidarity with Palestine without fear of arrest or police brutality.
We see how calm this demonstration is. So the banning of pro-Palestinian marches on the pretext that they will cause violence or disorder is totally false. How can one be against the right to freedom of expression, and especially when all they are expressing is a call to peace?
In a sign of how far to the right the nation's political class has shifted, the left-leaning coalition in French Parliament seems to be definitively fractured after the Socialist and Green parties suspended their participation in order to support Israel even more.
We can't consider any organization to be leftist or supportive of the average worker if they support the Israeli regime and Macron's anti-Palestinian policies. So the work these political parties have decided upon isn't surprising at all, and they won't be missed.
Pro-Palestinian rallies continue to be banned elsewhere nationwide, exposing France to more accusations of hypocrisy regarding their constant claim to defend the freedom of speech. France's public support for Palestine is really only just getting started, but there continues to be a massive outpouring of support worldwide, fueled by unprecedented coverage of Israeli atrocities in social media and alternative media, and by what many see as the hypocritical and biased stances of Western governments. Ramin Mazahari, Paris.
They have tried to suppress the voice of the Palestinians. Common catchphrases, all-out support for Israel, unwavering support, and the likes. But finally, the world is not buying it. No amount of media coverage can cover up the Israeli crimes, including America's all-out support.
And we stand with the Palestinians, and we stand with Arabs. And they try and change the narrative because you own the narrative, see? This is our problem. You own the narrative. You own the United Nations. You own Hollywood. You own all these mouthpieces. Where are our voices? Our voices need to be heard as well. We've been watching your channel. And instead of mourning our dead, instead of mourning these Palestinian children, we've been having to deal with more dehumanization of Arabs.
And the proof that the tide is turning are in the worldwide protests. The world rallying behind Palestinians and Palestine. And it's not because Israel is murdering Palestinians, mostly women and children. Just think about it. How can this war bring out so many people from all corners of the world in such high numbers? It's because the world has been educated. It's informed now. It has witnessed four wars before. And it has seen the daily oppression and killing of Palestinians under an apartheid regime. Now U.S. politicians are speaking in a way that they haven't before.
Congresswoman representing the Massachusetts 7th Congressional District.
Where is your humanity? How do you look at one atrocity and say this is wrong, but you watch as bodies pile up, as neighborhoods are leveled, Israel has dropped more bombs in the last 10 days than we dropped in a whole year in Afghanistan. Where is your humanity? Where is your outrage? Where is your care?
The passion in her voice from an American politician is for life and how it's being snuffed out, taken away with a missile, ones that are made in the USA. Since the war started, 45 cargo planes transported weapons from the U.S. to Israel. Among the military aid, around 1,000 tons of armaments, including 155-millimeter artillery shells, military vehicles, and supplies.
Thank you for listening. Take care and bye-bye.
The bustle of life. The sound of living. Only sound will endure.
Hello.
IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
In the U.S., House Oversight Committee Chairman James Comer said his panel has uncovered evidence that Joe Biden in 2018 received a $200,000 direct payment from his brother James Biden and sister-in-law Sarah Biden, and is demanding the president answer questions about the payment. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Stay with us. The national broadcaster CBS News has covered this story and tells us more. House Republicans released bank records of President Biden's brother, James Biden, on Friday, 20th of October, that they argue raise more questions about whether President Biden personally benefited from his family's business ventures. Bank records released by the GOP-led House Committee on Oversight and Accountability revealed a $200,000 personal check paid to Joe Biden from his brother James Biden and sister-in-law Sarah Biden. The personal check, which was labeled a loan repayment, was issued before Biden's presidency on the same date in 2018 when AmeriCorps Health LLC, a healthcare company that manages rural hospitals across the United States, also wired a $200,000 loan into James Biden's PNC bank account. In video remarks posted to X, Representative James Comer, the Republican chairman of the House Oversight and Accountability Committee, claimed Joe Biden's ability to be paid back by his brother depended on the success of his family's shady financial dealings. In a bankruptcy filing last year, AmeriCorps Health LLC claimed James Biden received hundreds of thousands of dollars in loans from the company on the promise that his last name could open doors and that he could obtain a large investment from the Middle East based on his political connections. After AmeriCorps Health LLC later filed suit for non-payment, James Biden agreed to a settlement payment with AmeriCorps for $350,000. James Biden's attorney took issue with the way the Republican-led panel has described the check. The Oversight Committee's description of the $200,000 check is highly selective and misleading, said Paul Fishman, attorney for James Biden. The committee has the bank documents that show both the loan Jim received from his brother in January of 2018 and the repayment by check 6 weeks later. At no time did Jim involve his brother in any of his business relationships. This latest document release comes after Representative James Comer pledged to continue to follow the money in his investigation into the Biden family's businesses, even as the House remains in disarray without an elected speaker for over 2 weeks. Shortly after Representative Kevin McCarthy was ousted as Speaker of the House, James Comer asserted the Oversight Committee would continue to read emails, text messages, put together timelines trying to get people to come in. In September, the Oversight Committee said it had uncovered how the Bidens and their associates created over 20 shell companies, most of which were created when Joe Biden was vice president, and raked in over $24 million between 2014 and 2019. Adding committee investigators had identified 9 members of the Biden family who have participated in or benefited from these business schemes. President Biden was not among those named by the committee. The House of Representatives remain paralyzed, and Republicans, who are in the majority, are back to square one after dropping Jim Jordan as their Speaker nominee following his third failed attempt to win the speakership on Friday, 20th of October. Republicans will try again to settle on a candidate on Monday, nearly 3 weeks after Representative Kevin McCarthy first lost his speakership earlier this month. The Fox News Channel has also covered the same story. House Oversight Committee Chairman James Comer said his panel has uncovered evidence that Joe Biden in 2018 received a $200,000 direct payment from his brother James Biden and sister-in-law Sarah Biden, and is demanding the president answer questions about financial arrangements with members of his family. James Comer, Republican of Kentucky, has been leading an investigation into the Biden family's business dealings since January, and whether President Joe Biden was involved in those ventures or personally benefited from them. Comer in September issued 3 subpoenas for the personal and business bank accounts belonging to both Hunter Biden and James Biden. Comer, in a video posted on X, formerly known as Twitter, detailing his committee's latest findings, Comer said the check was written by James Biden to President Joe Biden as a loan repayment, but questioned the timing. Bank records obtained by the House Committee on Oversight and Accountability have revealed a $200,000 direct payment from James Biden and Sarah Biden to Joe Biden in the form of a personal check. Comer explains that in 2018, James Biden received $600,000 in loans from AmeriCorps, a financially distressed and failing rural hospital operator. According to bankruptcy court documents, James Biden received these loans based upon representations that his last name, Biden, could open doors and that he could obtain a large investment from the Middle East based on his political connections. On 1st of March 2018, AmeriCorps Health LLC wired a $200,000 loan into James and Sarah Biden's personal bank account, not their business bank account, James Comer said. And then, on the very same day, James Biden wrote a $200,000 check from his same personal bank account to his brother, Joe Biden. The New York Post has also covered the same story and tells us more. President Biden received a $200,000 check in 2018 from his younger brother, James, on the same day that he received the same amount from a U.S. hospital chain by promising to secure a Middle East investor bank records obtained by Congress show. This summer, Joe Biden said, "Where's the money?" "Well, we found some," House Oversight Committee Chairman James Comer said in a video posted on Friday afternoon, 20th of October, to X, formerly known as Twitter. James Comer said that James Biden wrote the check to his powerful brother as a loan repayment without providing further context. Even if this was a personal loan repayment, it's still troubling that Joe Biden's ability to be paid back by his brother depended on the success of his family's shady financial dealings, the chairman, James Comer, said. James Biden received a total of $600,000 in loans from the since-defunct rural hospital operator AmeriCorps Health in 2018. The firm's bankruptcy trustee said in July of 2022 court filing that James Biden procured the $600,000 in loans from AmeriCorps based upon representations that his last name, Biden, could open up doors and that he could open a large investment from the Middle East based on his political connections. The records do not specify which Middle Eastern country James Biden was courting, though he was involved in a different business relationship relating to Saudi Arabia at around the same time. It's unclear what progress James Biden made towards securing the foreign funds before AmeriCorps filed for bankruptcy in 2019. James Biden received an initial $400,000 tranche from AmeriCorps on 12th of January 2018 and the latter $200,000 which was sent to Joe Biden on 1st of March of that year. The transfer to Joe Biden, who was not in elected office at the time, could be the strongest evidence to date that the 80-year-old president benefited financially from his involvement in his relative's business dealings. Joe Biden claimed in 2019, while a presidential candidate, that he had never discussed with my son or my brother anything having to do with their businesses, but significant evidence has since emerged that he regularly interacted with his relatives' partners from countries like China and Ukraine.
IRIB English Radio presents Viewpoints.
Viewpoints.
With the presence of different scholars.
The presence of different scholars. IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners from all around the world. Welcome back to IRIB English Radio. You're listening to the program Viewpoint. I am Beta, and today again I have the honor to be at your service as the host of today's episode. And with me there are two dear guest speakers, Brother Ali and Sheikh. Assalamu alaikum. Welcome to the studio.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Thank you. It's an honor to have you here with me. In this episode, we're going to talk about pluralism, which before going through this concept, I'm going to recite to you one of the verses of Holy Quran. Surely, the true religion with Allah is Islam. And those to whom the book had been given didn't show opposition, but after knowledge had come to them out of envy among themselves. And whoever disbelieves in the communication of Allah, then surely Allah is quick in reckoning. So I wanted to start our episode with this beautiful answer to the school of thought of pluralism. And then we're going to dig more into these concepts. So first, I want you to define more this pluralism, this religious pluralism. Sheikh, let's start with you.
A'udhu billahi min ash-shaytan ar-rajim. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. It's important to differ between the different types of pluralism out there. Like if we're talking about religious pluralism.
Yeah, religious one.
And if it's religious pluralism, are we talking about the philosophical aspect of it?
Yeah.
The governmental aspect of it? The social aspect of it? What are we talking about precisely? If we're talking philosophically that there, one can believe in various religions and whatever he believes in, then he's going to enter heaven. That's going to be that's incorrect. Reality is one. And purple doesn't change into blue. Reality is one. Therefore, the truth is one. If the truth is one, it does affect you. You cannot state that I will believe in this and that. This religion A that you want to follow supposedly orders you to do this, 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 and prohibits you to do that, 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 that. Religion B orders you to do maybe sometimes the opposite of religion A tells you to do. Yeah. Prohibits you from the opposite of what religious A tells you to do, what to do. So therefore, you will be in this contradictory dilemma of mental contradictory dilemma. Looking at governments nowadays, if that's that philosophical, you know, mental aspect of it. Looking at governments nowadays and that people are coexisting together, it is possible to coexist, but at the end of the day, the government has its own laws and regulations that might not go according to religion. That's something that we have to deal with during the time of the disappearance of our imam or the unappearance of our imam. And if we go on to, for example, a social level, like, for example, marrying or neighboring, then it's happened before. And even happened during the time of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wa alihi. Amir al-Mu'minin alayhi salam used to, when he was during his rule in Kufa, he used to go to the Christians of Kufa. Yeah. And he used to even do sadaqah to some extent to the Christians available. So coexisting to some extent is there.
Thank you. And Brother Ali?
Yeah, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. May Allah's peace and blessings be upon the Holy Prophet of Islam, Muhammad, and his purified progeny. I think the topic of discussion is religious pluralism
rather than
the pluralism in other aspects and other forms. And it is one of the topics of philosophy of religion. And means believing the truth or salvation of all or a set of religions in a single era. So this is an issue that is in actually opposition to monism rather than pluralism. Al-Quran accepts the long-term validity of the laws of the divine prophets and considers all of them in the true sense of the word in the era of the Islam. The debate is here that if all religions can at the same time be actually lead us to salvation at the same time, at this time that we are in. What does Islam say? Islam says, as you rightly mentioned at the beginning in your introduction, that an-din 'indallah al-Islam, that is, exclusively Islam is the way to salvation. And but in the concept of salvation, the concept of salvation itself, Islam says that actually it agrees with approving other prophets, I mean the earlier prophets, and respecting them and having Islam as the religion, as the core religion of this belief.
But can I just add something to your words, to elaborate on his words real quick, very sorry, brother. The verses in the Holy Quran are very clear about the fact that the past prophets, before Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam, their religion was Islam.
Definitely.
Yaqub, Ibrahim, Musa, Noah, all of them claimed to or stated that our religion is Islam.
Because Islam means submission.
It's submission to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
Submission to Allah. And if it was named by, for example, Christianity or Judaism or any other religion, it's just a term that, but the religion and Allah, that is the religion in the before Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, is Islam itself. So even the religion that Ibrahim brought, the religion that Adam, Nuh and other prophets brought, that is quite Islam. But at this time, follow, for example, Judaism and say that, okay, through Judaism and Christianity or other Buddhism or others, I can't reach to salvation. Islam says no. The only way that today reaches you to salvation is al-Islam. But you need to respect your previous and past religions as well. Why? Because they were incomplete religions that we discussed earlier, that they have been completed and they have become comprehensive by Islam. So, longitudinally speaking, yes, Islam agrees that all the religions could actually reach you to the salvation. But in the same era, in the same time that we are living and the other religions are available, this is only Islam that actually in same years and let's say in same era and time that we are, it is only Islam that actually reaches you to salvation. And this concept of pluralism that has been actually entered the the world, I can say. It actually started in 19th century and continued to be prevalent in the world by Jan Hayek and others. First by Lutze, the German philosopher, in 1841 by his book Ma Ba'd al-Tabi'ah in philosophy, and then later after him it actually was a work done by Jan Hayek. So they said that all the followers of the religion, due to whatever they believe, through whatever they believe, they can be saved and they can reach salvation, and they can follow every religion or every belief that they have, and they can actually the ways towards Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala are plenty, and they can practice and experience whatever they like.
Yeah.
So it has some internal paradox and conflict, but itself, I think it's a problematic concept that it needs to be criticized and reviewed.
Yeah, thank you, Brother Ali. So, as you both mentioned, the meaning, the literal meaning of Islam means being submission to Allah Almighty. And the thing here is we are living in a world which the meaning of religion is somehow being lost among the youth generation specifically, you know? Like, I feel like there is no difference between being a Muslim or a Jewish person or whatever. We're all the same, and we all want to be human beings, okay? And as the time that we are practicing being a human, we are practicing humanitarian acts and so on, that's enough. This is the mindset that is growing faster and faster in the young generation. What do you think about it, Sheikh?
I think that during our times, there has been a loss of, or let's say, confusion of culture and religion.
Yeah.
And they kind of, you know, feel like the religion is part of their culture more than it is a religion. And more than that, we are living in a time where, like it started in the 60s, materialism is kind of becoming very strong.
Yeah,
I think that we forget the fact about how materialism affects our life. And I said before the show that when I was in the States, I saw their mental issues, and it was because of me seeing them so intact into materialism. They haven't been living in the villages. And that could be viewed in the 60s in the United States, where religion started to fall down. I'm talking about Christianity now in the United States.
Yeah, yeah.
Religion started to fall down as materialism started to rise. When you have things ready for you, you lose that connection with the Creator. You lose that connection with the reality of human beings. And that is why I feel like we are living in a materialistic world. We cannot deny that. We're sitting in our house. I was eating an apple the other day. I was like, the person who took who put the seed, who gave it water, who watched it grow, who paid attention to it, who put the chemicals to kill the bugs, who put the sticker on it, who transported it, who made the car that transported the apple all the way over here. So just looking at that apple made me into shock that we take it for granted. I just cross the street, I buy the apples, I go home. Unlike like in the old times where you have to see how it grows, you have to, you know, you have to have that hope of it raining, of having good weather and so on and so on and so on, and the difficulties that it comes along with. So living in this materialistic environment kind of, you know, closes you down and makes you forget about, you know, your reality. And I feel like that's why kind of religion is kind of, you know, far off. And when you fall into this materialistic ideas, or you fall into running after fame, running after wealth nowadays is very hard, because everyone is living in such a manner that if you do not have this money, you'll be considered taboo in society.
Yeah, exactly.
So running after this is going to eat a lot of your time, and religion needs time. You cannot deny that.
Yeah.
Either time to learn or to apply your religion. Time for your worships, time to learn about your religion. All these are time-consuming, and with your daily lives and hectic schedules, you're not going to have enough time. And I think that's very worrying, and it has to be solved, and there has to be, you know.
So what is your solution?
To really give time like to, you have to step away from your materialistic life and, you know, give time to your religion, either by learning or by, you know, applying it altogether.
So, no, the point is, all the things that you mentioned are true. And this time consuming actually process that we have to go through in order to gain this belief in religion is a bit kind of something like extra for my generation, because it feels like we don't need it. I mean, the need of religion is being lost here. Why? And how should we change this perspective in this actually generation?
That's the thing. We don't see the importance of religion anymore.
Yeah.
Like the materialistic life that we're living in, the man that we're living in, we're not seeing. And it's also noteworthy that we are living at a time where there is no or the lack of that true infestation or manifestation or illustration of religion in someone, like for the people who lived during the time of Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wa sallam. They saw religion, they could see religion manifested in who? In the Prophet himself. During our times, we see the people who are, you know, living themselves enough time where there is no imam. And the best that they have are scholars who, for example, who they themselves admit that we are not like the Prophet, and we're not infested, we're not, you know, like the Prophet as role models.
Yeah.
They're our best chance, you know. And I think that that farness from our religion is really also kind of hurting us. And
yeah, thank you, Sheikh.
It's a two-way thing, you know. Like yeah, okay. As scholars, it's our obligation, and as for the community, it's their also obligation to look.
Thank you for being with me in this episode too. And just don't forget that there is one religion here for you, which is Islam, and Islam means submission to Allah Almighty. And that's all. You know, I think we're living in a world that we tend to make everything difficult to understand, make everything philosophical and different, but it's just a bit simple if you think about it. Thank you for listening to me. I wish you enjoy the episode of today. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi.
Shining bright, you came to us with a heart so full of love, and you showed that you're the one who cares the most, and to us you've always been so close. Everyone will say, please save me, except Al-Habib. Ummati, Ummati, yaquluha lana yawm al-qiyamati. Ummati, Ummati, yaquluha shafa'atan ana laha.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/parstodayenglish.
In the limelight.
Amid the cacophony of the Zionist regime's unrelenting bombardment of the besieged Gaza Strip and massacre of Palestinian civilians, Western media are busy with a disinformation campaign to whitewash the war crimes of the Zionist occupiers. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. The Electronic Intifada wrote, "An Israeli carpet bombing rains death and destruction on the civilians of Gaza. The promise of more military support from the U.S. and its Western allies betrays true savagery and inhumanity on behalf of the West. Yet, as a genocide unfolds in front of our eyes, it is ignorance that has proven to be the greatest weapon against the people of Gaza. As Western regimes and Western media cheerlead for the genocide of an entire people by Zionist fanatics, the most chilling aspect of all this is the ease with which Western populaces have bought into the frenzy. It is ignorance which has facilitated this barbarism and even encouraged it. Ignorance of the history of a 75-year occupation, ignorance of the daily injustice and persecution faced by Palestinians, ignorance of the arbitrary murder and detention of Palestinian men, women, and children, all of which register little, if any, coverage in Western media. It is this historical ignorance that subsequently facilitates the rewriting of history, the racism that celebrates brutality and violence against those deemed inferior, and the hatred that abets the genocide of an entire people with relative ease. It allows governments and media of the West to fabricate stories about mass rapes and the beheading of babies in the knowledge they will be swallowed whole by their gullible publics." Across the West, people are told that Palestinians are the embodiment of evil, while their Zionist occupiers and jailers who have had their iron heel on the neck of Palestinians for 75 years are innocent victims of an inexplicable and irrational hatred. And people know this because the leaders of Western regimes, those bastions of democracy, freedom, and humanity, have told them so, while simultaneously their media allies have obediently repeated these mendacious charges with a consistent and criminal complicity. The powerful effect of this propaganda machine is undeniable. As they watch the barbarism unleashed on Gaza, the fact that this is being cheered on by so many across the West demonstrates the Western establishment's successful conditioning of its citizens and is a disquieting reminder as to how unconsciously indoctrinated the Western public is. This was highlighted in a CNN poll taken on October 12th to 13th in the United States, which showed that 50% of the American public believes the Zionist regime's government military assault on Gaza to be fully justified, with another 20% believing it to be partially justified. Only 8% said that the murderous bombardment was unjustified. And while many millions have demonstrated across European cities in solidarity with Gaza and the Palestinian people, it is evident that there is also a significant layer of the European population that sympathizes with and supports the Zionist regime's ethnic cleansing of Gaza. The Electronic Intifada added, this mass delusion has not happened overnight. The ground has been carefully laid over many years. Bias is reflected not only in the Western media's presentation of stories, but in the very choice of what stories to comment on. And the establishment's adherence to this deceit ensures their citizens can be convinced that the victim is the bully, that the morally repugnant are honorable innocents, and that the inhumane and the murderous are the merciful and the virtuous. It also explains Western regimes' determined efforts to retain their self-appointed role as gatekeeper of all that we should know, as they shut down any alternative voices or social media that exposes their lies. For many, the war started on October 7th. There is no history, no context, no background. It is simply an unprovoked attack without right nor reason, perpetrated by those who are evil and who the media tells them are animals. And once these unpeople are dehumanized, the Western populace is further desensitized and the green lighting of genocide is assured, with little opposition. A history of 75 years of occupation, of brutalization and murder, is buried under the hell's cap of thousands of tons of rubble and the crushed bones of the occupied, while the West clamors for more. By any measure, the facilitation, the acceptance, and indeed the celebration of genocide across so-called democratic Western regimes will surely rank as the most nefarious achievement of Western regimes. Years of consistent and relentless propaganda have led to the virtual brainwashing of vast swathes of its population. Consequently, and disturbingly, the fomenting of widespread and enthusiastic support amongst its citizens for genocide proved relatively easy. Ignorance had seen to that. So, as leaders of the West and their media stenographers watched their Zionist allies ethnically cleansing Gaza, they will doubtless feel a huge sense of satisfaction and pride that a significant proportion of their populace is fully behind the butchery. After years of effort, the normalization of genocide has been accomplished. Their propaganda, distortions, and omissions have led to this day. For Palestinians are unpeople. Western regimes have told their people so. Western media has confirmed it, and consequently, they deserve to die. Press TV also noted, without any clinching evidence, the false claims of children being beheaded and women being raped made headlines and were used to justify the Zionist regime's horrendous war crimes and collective punishment of civilians in Gaza. The Western media, biased in favor of the Zionist regime, have resorted to one-sided narratives by amplifying unsubstantiated claims, manipulating the truth, and fueling anti-Muslim hate crimes. The incident in Illinois is directly connected to lies peddled by the Western media and political leaders such as Biden, so they are directly complicit in the cold-blooded murder of the six-year-old Wadi. The Zionist regime's decades-long occupation of Palestine, unrelenting persecution of Palestinians, and the regime's project of settler colonialism have rarely been evaluated critically by Western media. In the wake of the Operation Al-Aqsa Storm, Westerners have become obsessed with condemning Hamas, while the Zionist regime's actions over the past several decades have been conveniently ignored. Hamas is a resistance movement that is fighting for the rights of Palestinians and for the liberation of occupied territories. The operation they launched has to be seen in the context of what has been unfolding in the Gaza Strip and the occupied West Bank in recent years. The Zionist disinformation project, promoted by the Western media, is aimed at deflecting attention from real truth. The truth of who is the oppressor and who is the oppressed.
Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Israeli warplanes target areas near three hospitals in the Gaza Strip after the regime orders 20 hospitals in the besieged territory to evacuate. Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi strongly condemns U.S. President pro-Israeli remarks as reactionary and inhuman, saying they prove the regime's fake nature. And people around the world take to the streets to condemn Israel's atrocities against the people of Palestine.